Peter Steiner is a super creative man and a great friend of this program. He was a longtime cartoonist for The New Yorker magazine. For example, he's the force behind the cartoon that nearly everyone has heard of, the one caption, "On the internet, nobody knows you're a dog." He's also the accomplished novelist who has written the thrillers The Resistance, The Capitalist, and The Terrorist, all featuring the protagonist Lewis Morgan. His latest project is the graphic novel An Atheist in Heaven. It is a great pleasure to welcome Peter Steiner back to the roundtable this morning. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm very well, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's always good to see you and always a delight, because that means when you come that there's something new out. This is different for you, that what you have worked on. Tell us a little bit about this project and what you were setting out to do from the beginning.
Well, it was something that came to me almost immediately as an interesting project that I could both write and draw. As you know, I'm a cartoonist by trade also, and so it was a wonderful chance to combine these two things. And it was, I had been having thoughts about mortality, which one does as one gets older, and wondering what was there after one goes, where does one go? And I decided to make up an interesting journey that would ponder those questions. And it sort of turned into a, I guess you could call it a comic work of theology, which doesn't make much sense in the abstract, but I think that's sort of what it is.
Now, the character that we meet at the beginning of the book is just referred to as the man.
Yes.
And so is this in any way, shape, or form you?
Yes. It is me in some shapes and forms, but not all. A lot of the story is made up, but a lot of it comes from my life, and most particularly the heart attack.
Right.
So that was sort of what set me thinking in this direction, having had a heart attack. So the story begins with a man having a heart attack.
And then he ends up talking to God.
Yeah.
And which brings us to the title of An Atheist in Heaven. And
yes.
there's the discussion that takes place between the two. And so I love your idea. I love your explanation of this, of theology too, because while you're doing all of this, it is very, you stay very close to your comic roots, don't you?
Right. Right. Well, the drawings are cartoon drawings, and the conversation is done in word balloons or bubbles, so that the format is a familiar comic format. And I tried to make it not necessarily funny, but humorous. And a lot of I thought anyway that a lot of it was humorous, and so that was. That was almost inevitable for me, since that's kind of where my roots lie, and I think where my temperament is also.
It is. I found it interesting because I find myself asking this question of artists a lot, which is, and that's whether we're talking about theater or painting or a novel, that does this help you understand, did you write this to work through that theology, or had you already come to a place of understanding it for yourself that allowed you to write the book?
No, I did actually do it as a way to understand it. And in fact, the writing of it went fairly quickly. It's not that many words, probably
right.
2,000 or 3,000 words. But the sorting out of the ideas was happening as I was writing it. And then, interestingly enough, when I started drawing it, some of the things I had written took on new meaning because of the visualization of it. So it was something that developed, and the ending was a surprise to me. It came very close to when I was doing the last few pages. I suddenly realized how the book was going to end. I'm not going to.
No, we won't get into that.
Yeah.
But you didn't know that was going to be your place, your end stop.
No, I didn't.
Well, that seems, I've heard this described different ways by writers of say, well, either that is delightful because you're on a ride, or that it's just very manic because, oh my God, I don't know how this thing's going to end.
Well, it can be a little of both, actually. I mean, I do enjoy it. And it also causes a story to open up. I mean, I know writing a thriller, for instance, if you don't know where the next threat is coming from, there's no way to telegraph it to the reader ahead of time so they can see it coming. And that worked in this thing also. I mean, the danger of not knowing where it's going is meandering all over the place, and there is some meandering here, but I don't mind that. I like that about it.
Was the color, was that all real, or was that done later in the process?
No, that all happened as I was doing it. It's drawn with an India ink pen and then colored with colored pencils.
Mm.
And I like the colored pencils because you can sort of layer color on and unexpected things happen. And I also wanted... It looks homemade. I wanted it to look homemade.
I was going to ask you about that because there is a preciseness. Anyone who knows you from your work from The New Yorker and the other cartoon work that you do, there's such a preciseness to that that seems to be different here. That
yeah.
it seems more, which also I think makes it more emotional and more personal.
Yeah, I think that's right. There is but one reason for the lack of preciseness is my hands are getting a little wobblier as I draw. So there's not going to be that kind of clean, crisp stuff that I used to do. And also, I'm just more relaxed about it. I want it to, as I say, I wanted it to look homemade and fresh.
Is it a challenge as an artist after you've been doing that for so long of doing the, you know, the one gag of,
right.
of suddenly that you have a story and there has to be consistency from one frame to the next?
I didn't find it much of a challenge. And actually, it looks to the outsider like there's consistency. But to me, when I look at it, I see where, as I drew...
You could show me the inconsistencies.
I could go through it and find them. Yeah, yeah. I try not to focus on them.
And I also, I mean, I don't know why I thought of this as I was reading it, but it's in those word bubbles that you described, they're cursive,
yeah.
Which is interesting. Was that a conscious choice or
yeah?
Just...
Well, half of them are cursive. The man speaks in type in printing,
yeah,
and God speaks in cursive, so I wanted to somehow distinguish the words of God, just, you know, how Bibles have the words of God in red. This
right.
is my version of that.
The name of the book is An Atheist in Heaven by Peter Steiner. Is this what would be described a graphic novel?
Yeah, I really hate that word, but I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate it too because it's often not true.
Yeah, it's usually not that graphic and not very
not a novel. Often yeah. it's a true story,
yeah.
right?
But I think what that simply means is a long, serious comic book, you know. That's what it is. It's an eccentric version of a graphic novel. I'm not a fan of graphic novels generally, and I don't read them, but they all seem very different from what this one is.
What is it that you are not a fan of? Is it just sort of a general lack of interest, or is there something precise that you don't like about
the
form?
So many of them I see are if they're well drawn, they're poorly written. If they're well written, they're poorly drawn. I mean, it's hard to make both those things work together that way in an extended way. I mean, there are some wonderful ones, but to me, those have been the exceptions.
The idea, of course, just inherent in the title of the book, is that an atheist in heaven. So, again, back to the theology.
Right.
So that's really what you're wrestling with here.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I wouldn't call myself an atheist because I don't know enough about what's out there. The God that I could believe in would be so humongous and complicated and in just inconceivable that it doesn't seem to make any sense to me to try to figure out what it is. It's just something that's larger than our imaginations. So I guess that's a version of atheist. And being so complicated, it doesn't make much sense to spend much time thinking, trying to figure him out. So I essentially created the God that I would enjoy meeting if I went to heaven.
Right. did you think, I guess I'm also interested in your, did you ever have a moment or a period in your life where you were, that you had a spiritual track, that you knew what, that there was a label that would go with?
Never did. Okay. I grew up in a kind of loud Southern church where we sang a lot, which I enjoyed, and there was a little bit of hellfire and brimstone, and I was amused by that, and I enjoyed it, and it was the social center of our community, the church was, so it was important to me that way, but the religion never affected me.
I was amused by that. I like that. I think that's funny.
I have a friend who, when he goes to church, he works crossword puzzles, and that was sort of, that kind of distance, almost indifference, was my reaction to it, and I haven't gone to a church service for many years.
So did you, I have two questions that hopefully I'm not out of line in asking, but one of them is, did you, given the heart attack, I mean, it's inevitable that you're going to think about death, right?
Sure.
And even upon survival, that stays with you.
It stays. I have at least three heart attacks a day. Every time I feel a little twinge in my arm, you know, oh my God, there it is again.
Right.
So, yeah, it stays with you.
Now, so bringing you in that chair opposite God, that we see in the book, was it always your understanding, or is it a hope or a conclusion that you would indeed be in heaven?
No, it's neither that. It's neither a hope, because I don't think I believe in heaven.
Right.
And I certainly have my doubts whether I'd make it there given the life I've lived.
but I guess I asked the question because if you were drawing hell, well, it would be different colored pencils, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, there are a couple of pictures of hell in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they'd be more red and
a little more fiery. Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the end, as you say, the ending, you come to this conclusion, and for you it was satisfying, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was satisfying. I mean, it sorted something out for me, you know. It sorted out how someone can believe in God, why someone would believe in God, all those things. I have a couple of friends who are, one is a former priest, and he loved the book. He thought it was kind of, as I said, a work of theology. So for me, it was a sorting out of a sort. And it was also, it was great fun to have a project, a drawing project that went on for the better part of a year. You know, I need in my life, I need projects like that. So that was, it was good. I should say something too about the printing of the book.
Yes.
There's a wonderful art printer in New York called Ink Ink, and it became clear to me that even if somebody wanted to publish this book, they were not going to publish it to look the way I wanted it to look. So I did it myself and made it a limited edition and you know, signed and numbered and all that stuff. But I think it just turned out beautifully. And to me, the contrast between the kind of homemade drawing look and the way the book feels and looks is terrific.
Well, that brings up two points of what it is like when you have, as an artist, and then you see your work reproduced, of having it in the hands of people the way you intended it. That's not as easy as it seems.
I mean, when you're an artist whose work is printed in cartoons, it's never the way you want it to look.
Yeah.
In fact, years ago, the New Yorker used to very carefully size the drawings so that they fit not only fit a space, but the size fit the drawing. So they would have some full page cartoons. Those days are gone, so nowadays there's always a hole that needs filling, and whatever the cartoon is gets plugged in there, and I'm sure every cartoonist that happens to has their heart sink when they see it. Not because it's too small necessarily, it might be too big, but it's just proportionally. So doing it, the way to do it the way you want it is to do it yourself. It's like, in a way, like doing a painting, you know.
So the way people get it is they can go to your website.
Yeah, they can do that. Yeah, I've got some left, not a lot, but yep. It was an edition of 100.
I assume you're asked this a great deal, and so I feel some obligation to ask you myself just because I'm curious about it. But I also understand if you don't want to or feel like answering the question, which is, are you happy with the state of cartooning that you have, the career that you had, which was, you would label a success, I assume?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a successful career.
It was a successful career.
So you do that. You do these cartoons. You're in the magazine in the New Yorker. This is the top publication. If you're a cartoonist, that's where you want your stuff.
Right.
What do you think of the magazine now and how it's bringing a new class of cartoonists in, and I mean that by age less than economics, of course.
Yeah, I should probably steer clear of that. I guess the only thing I would say is I'm not particularly happy with it, but going into details, I probably ought to stay out of the politics there.
Yeah, I understand, but it is, which brings up the question, did you ever expect or think that it would be political, or has that always been the way that it is? I mean, I know there's an inner workings of the New Yorker that's somewhat political, but I mean just in the cartooning in general.
It was always a little bit political, but it was political to a manageable extent.
Right.
And then it became, after William Shawn left and when Tina Brown became the editor, it became more political, and I think it's escalated since then.
And so, without getting the politics of the New Yorker, for God, I don't want to get you in trouble with anybody, but
I'm already in trouble.
Oh, okay, all right, that's fine. But the idea of just cartooning in general, of a young woman who is a brilliant cartoonist, a young man who is a brilliant cartoonist who comes forward and says, this is my work. Do they have a good future? I mean,
I don't think they do, and that's not because of the New Yorker necessarily. It's when I started cartooning, there were all sorts of venues for it. There were dozens of magazines that bought cartoons and used cartoons, and they paid decently, and you could make a career of it. And in the early days, the New Yorker also was more generous with the cartoonists than they are now. So I think it's probably I understand why people still want to be in the New Yorker. There's a lot of panache that goes with that, but I don't think it's a lifetime career for very many people.
It's also something that I've always wondered about, and again, I know it inevitably comes back to the New Yorker because it's where you were, and it's sort of the only game in town now. But it is a huge draw to the magazine. There are many people who subscribe to that publication. I raise my hand high, that subscribe to it because of the cartooning.
Is that still true for you?
Less so. Less so.
Why is that?
Because now you're getting me in trouble. I think for many of the reasons that we talked about, I don't think there is the depth and the, perhaps for want of a better word, although I kind of like it, for a lack of sincerity in the work that seems to be not as in depth as it used to be.
Yeah, well, it was. It you know, the New Yorker still does call them drawings, not cartoons, because they took them seriously as drawings, and they treated them as an art form, which they are. I think they can be. And now, essentially, okay, here we go. Now, essentially, they're illustrated jokes.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't need the drawings, and the drawings, to my way of thinking, are not often not very good and not very important. So there's nothing in the drawings that makes you laugh. It's the tagline.
Do you see that as a representation of what is happening in the cartoons, or do you see that kind of across the board? Because not only is that publication responsible as a main outlet for cartoons, but also for art, also for short fiction, also for investigative journalism. Do you see that as an across the board, or does it seem to focus mostly on the cartooning?
Well, I see it mostly in the cartooning. I'm less qualified to judge the other stuff. I mean, they do seem to have very good investigative reporting going on, from what I can tell.
Yes.
I think this kind of, I would call it a sort of cynical indifference to quality, is something you find across our whole society now. I mean, in the arts, the way paintings are, you know, the way artists are bought and sold, the way books are bought and sold, it's all about money. And I think follow the money. And that's kind of what's happened to all of the arts.
And it seems especially frustrating because there are very, very, very talented people out there.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who do really wonderful work whom you'll never hear of or see their work.
So back to the atheist in heaven.
Yeah.
You look at this project and you think, oh, well, I'd like to do something like this again.
Yeah, you know, I had started something like this before the heart attack happened, which shifted my focus. And it was a memoir, a drawn memoir called How I Died. Then I almost died, and I thought I was
changed the ending of that too.
But I've still got you know, 30 or 40 pages of that, and I may come back to that. I mean, the idea of a written memoir is appalling to me, but a funny one could be good.
And will you continue to write fiction?
I will, and I have. I just finished a novel, and I no longer have a publisher, so I'm in the search for a publisher right now. I finished a novel about Germany in the 1920s and 30s, which is the moment where Hitler was on the rise, and it seems to have certain analogies to our life in America right now.
What is happening?
So.
Well, which brings me to my final question to you, because you still have a regular outlet. Like if something strikes you funny and you want to do a cartoon, you still have an outlet to do that.
My outlet at this moment is the Lakeville Journal.
Right.
So yeah, I have that, and I do political cartoons for them, sort of rude, anti-Trump stuff.
And that sounds fun.
It is fun.
Yeah.
It's necessary, actually, for me. I mean, I just have so much spleen to get out that I have to do these drawings. And I also have a website and a blog. So, yeah. No, I'm not for want of an outlet.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if you get paid for it, it's even better.
Yeah, but you know what? That doesn't really, that's not that important to me any longer.
Yeah.
And it's not at all important to me.
It's getting the art out.
Yeah, just and doing it is wonderful, and having it seen kind of finishes the what do I want to say?
Well, the process,
the process. Yeah.
And because an audience is important. I mean, I assume you hear from them. There is a conversation with them.
Occasionally, not much, but I know they're out there. So, you know, that's sufficient.
That's good enough.
Yeah.
The name of the book is An Atheist in Heaven. Peter Steiner, it's always a great pleasure to...
It was fun for me too, Jeff.
Thanks. Program. Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.